When I began to write this, the rain was coming down so hard that it sounded like hail. I planned to write for a bit and then head out for air, but this seemed less likely by the moment. It was late in the day. I'm not sure how that happened. The dinner hour came and I hadn't walked or been outside yet. I examined the day with curiosity. How had that happened? Meetings, a bunch of handling things, a bout of severe exhaustion, and a nap. My daughter and I love a fantasy series called The Wizard of Once. In it, one of the main characters, a warrior bodyguard by the name of Bodkin, has the unfortunate stress response of falling asleep when anything really bad happens. And this is often, since they are always out fighting bad people and creatures. And these days I feel a bit like him. I suffer attacks of exhaustion and need to sleep. The world is surreal and strange. I didn't plan this sermon like I usually do. Usually there's a lot of research and free writing and musing all through the week. There's a topic I've known about for months, and some ideas about what to say that I've crafted into a title and a statement. This one I've waited to write all week, because things change so fast. I don't know what might have happened and what would have our attention until the very last moment. What would be important to say here, now? Now that I've slept, my body just wants to get up and walk slowly, without aim, in the forest around my house. The rain has stopped jabbing down at last, but it is heavy and steady and drenching, so I overrule my body's instincts on that. I am writing this on Thursday and Friday, and you are listening on Sunday. Things change so fast. So to remind you, as I write, we just reached over 1.1 million confirmed coronavirus cases, a quarter of them in the United States. Over half the world is in lockdown. In the U.S., 10 million people have applied for unemployment insurance. The news is full of suffering, sickness, death, job loss, and isolation. Other suffering isn't stated, but it is clear. Fear, an anticipation of how much worse it is going to get. Things around us are falling apart. I started to write that this is just like watching the twin towers come down, but that is completely wrong. This is like watching something much more gigantuan fall. The U.S. Empire, global capitalism, the democratic West, human hubris. I just don't know. But it seems one thing is for sure true. Global 21st century corporate fossil fuel driven capitalism can't deal with this problem. Our culture has inhaled the false story of capitalistic economics. If we all look out for ourselves, the greater good will be served. Collapsing ecosystems, climate change, global child poverty, and the high rates of despair proved that all wrong some time ago. Still, the story persists. We believe in the individual, the single self. Do as you wish. Buy much. If you succeed, you are worthy. If you do not, you aren't. The poet reminded us this morning of the other capitalistic dictates. You are nothing if not productive. That consumption equals happiness. That you are at your best when you resemble an efficient machine. The global capitalist web does indeed tell us that we are all interconnected. And we are seeing that if we don't buy things, buy services and experiences, people lose jobs and they suffer. If we don't offer something that someone wants to buy, we suffer. In a society, how much we consume has come to being well-being, our own, and the global web of human existence. And so have the directives to be endlessly productive and frantically busy. If we do this, we will be well. If we do this, the world will be well. In her poem Pandemic, the UU minister Lynn Unger begins, "What if you thought of it as the Jews consider the Sabbath, the most sacred of times? Cease from travel, cease from buying and selling. Give up just for now on trying to make the world different than it is. Sing, pray, touch only those to whom you commit your life. Center down." This is what I dreamed of so many years ago on March 22nd. I dreamed of a pause. I dreamed of a moment when we could just stop being so busy. When we could be still and quiet. I wondered what it would be like if we learned we didn't need so many things, or to do so much, or to go so many places. I wondered what it would be like if the world just took a breath and noticed what really mattered. Could we change? Could we figure out new ways to structure our economics and societies that measured people's well-being and ecosystem integrity instead of gross domestic product and the value of the stock market? Lots of great thinkers have thought of ways to do this. There hasn't been much way to get them into the mainstream conversation. Maybe I thought there would be now. We could dream, love, and advocate that world into being. The emails started coming almost immediately. All the justice issues to fight for, the articles about personal and cultural transformation, the analysis about what could be next. Would it be totalitarianism or a less fossil fuel based social democracy? I learned places I could get takeout and things I could buy online. There were lists of things I could do, online yoga and concerts and plays and movies and audiobooks and dance parties and social events and indoor activities for my kid. There was no pause at all. Much of the economy, I think, is humming along just fine, producing and engaging and asking me to attend to it, to be part of it, asking me to be busy, productive, and perfect, like a well-tuned machine who can do it all. So I felt such relief when I read the first stanzas of this morning's poem. You do not have to become totally zen. You do not have to use this isolation to make your marriage better, your body slimmer, your children more creative. You do not have to maximize its benefits by using the time to work even more, write the best-selling Corona diaries, or preach the gospel of Zoom. Things are falling apart. The ways we've structured our economy, our society, our government, and our ideas about what it means to be a valuable and worthy person aren't working right now. Even things that a profit-driven market economy should be able to deal with really well, like producing extremely in-demand masks and hand sanitizer and ventilators, aren't happening. It is hard to watch. It is even harder to figure out what is going on. We have crazy, wild data about everything, from COVID-19 to the economy. It doesn't mean much, this data. It comes in snips and snaps. It measures things no one has measured before. But people use it all, this data, and they draw conclusions, and they make predictions, and they write articles about it. And these things that they predict, that they conclude, the new snippets of data, change all the time, every day. What I notice is people choose their favorite bits based on their point of view, how they think this will turn out. And we all seem to talk across purposes. The fear of death is tangible. I mentioned to people that I know someone who has COVID-19, and the response is often an intake of breath, as if COVID-19 is a death sentence. I understand. The news is almost entirely about those who've died and about hospitals where so many are very, very ill. No one ever seems to say, but it is true, that nearly every person in the world who gets COVID-19 will live. Some will die. Many will die. But mostly, most of the people will live. We are doing Herculean things across our world to save lives and not crush our very fragile healthcare systems that care for so many more sick people than those with COVID-19. We're looking out for all the sick people in the world. And this is a good, and it is the right thing to do. We will save lives. We are saving lives right now. But getting COVID-19 is not a death sentence. Still, COVID-19, every day, front and center of every news outlet and social media conversation, does remind us that we are all going to die. That every person we know is going to die. They're probably not going to die of COVID-19, it turns out. But everybody is going to die someday of something. In these weeks, we are constantly reminded how clearly, how precarious life is. It can be taken from us at any moment. It is often unexpected. And in most cases, it's unwanted. And this is difficult. It is hard for us always to be in that. The cracks in our systems are showing: healthcare, safety nets, valuing capital investments over labor, who are people. My head spins a lot. I try to understand why world governments will shut down their societies and economies for a virus, but won't make milder adjustments for climate change, which will undoubtedly, in the long term, cause much more suffering and much more death. 1 million children die of starvation every single year. But no one declares an emergency about that. Why, I want to know. We should. Is it because COVID-19 can make anyone sick? And starvation just affects poor children? Is it another sign of how capitalism values some people over others? Things are breaking. But still so much goes on demanding us to be as we were. engaging us in narratives of who is good and who isn't, and when we're valuable and when we're not, that we did not write. Being the best we can be, making the most of this moment. Did you know that when a caterpillar goes into a cocoon, it turns to goo? It feels like much of what we have taken for granted is turning to goo. We don't know what will happen next, but it is a mess right now. I want to take a nap. I want to wander aimlessly under the trees, bask in the sun when it comes out. I just can't find it in me to rush into the next moment and become totally zen, or practice yoga an hour and a half a day, or spending my time making calls to transform the world after coronavirus into the one I desperately want it to be. The poet says a new paradigm is composing itself in our minds. Could birth at any moment if we clear some space from the same tired hegemonies. A new way is coming if we could clear some space from the old ways of being. If we could clear some space. Clearing space is not a to-do list. Our bodies are filled with consumer capitalistic ways of being. We are driven to do and to buy. But when things fall apart, it means suffering and facing death. It means uncertainty. It means seeing the brokenness laid bare. There is no to-do list for that. There is nothing to buy to fix it. There is no way we can be perfect enough to meet it. Instead, it is a shambles, like a forest after a tornado or a caterpillar turned to goo. The landscape is wrong. All the familiar patterns are missing. Stopping in such circumstances is natural. It is the natural way to be. Pausing, clearing the space. Maybe that means spiritual practices and long walks. Or it might not look anything like that. Even if your life looks nothing like the Sabbath, says the poet, your stress boa constricting your chest, know that your antsy kids, your terror, your shifting moods, your need for a drink have every right to be here and are no less sacred than a yoga class. I have read writers who talk about this time of initiation, or the beginning as initiation, or as the beginning of the hero's journey. This begins, traditionally, with a separation from what is normal. And we have all walked over that threshold already. The next step is an ordeal, where one must learn new skills and ways of being and find relationships that help one get through. But after that threshold, any initiate or future hero must stop and take bearings of this new place. It is the beginning of a journey into the unknown, to discover ourselves and our relationship to the world around us. It is a journey where we learn to hear the still, small voice within and have courage to follow it. It is a journey about discovering how embedded we are in our communities and about facing our greatest fears, whether that be death or loneliness or poverty. On it, we learn our power and how we are deeply loved by the force of life that gave us birth. Whoever you are, no matter how broken, the poet reminds us, the world still has a place for you, calls to you over and over, announcing your place as legit, as forgiven, even if you fail and fail and fail again. Remind yourself over and over all the swells and storms that run through your long, tired body all have their place here, now, in this world. It is your birthright to be held deeply, warmly, in the family of things, not one cell left in the cold. We must do nothing for this love. It is grace. That is the lie of our consumeristic, capitalistic society that we must prove and show worth. The society we have lived in can't save us from pandemics or death or poverty or despair. It does not hold us. What holds us is life. And the forces that uphold life and each other. On the other side of falling apart, there is the possibility of building a world on that very foundation, on life and our relationships. For now, though, we can just stop. We can pause. We can breathe. We can watch the news, TV, and our children. We can laugh and cry and shout. We can nap. We can eat too much chocolate and drink that extra glass of wine. It is our birthright to be held deeply, warmly in the family of things. The first evening I began this sermon, it stopped raining, and the sun came out. After the driving, drenching rain, I couldn't believe it. I pulled on my tennis shoes and I left the house. Droplets of rain held tightly to the tree branches, and the sunlight shone through them, so the trees sparkled with this dazzling, jeweled light. I wandered aimlessly through the trees for a while and came home to hear a neighbor I'd never met, an older woman with a friendly smile and outgoing nature, playing a large singing bowl. "Do you know what I'm doing?" she asked me. "It's 7," I realized. "Time to make loud sounds of appreciation for healthcare workers. And to announce we are alive and well." Another neighbor came out with a small drum. I clapped my hands. We stood over 6 feet apart, beneath the dripping trees and fading sun, strangers making joyful sounds together.